Okay. This is, I think, shir number four. I have a question. I'm trying to stick, in a sense, with this the approach we've been taking so far, which is to find Pirkei Tehillim that appear in the davening, that are meaningful in the davening, and for a couple of months later, we also picked Pirkei Tehillim that speak in particular to what's going on in the month. So this is sort of an unusual year in the sense that, as Ryan Huber mentioned, Friday night, one of those rare times when Asara B'Teves falls out on a Friday going into Shabbos, and it's really the only time we have that, because the only time you have that with calendaric Tanyos, not with personal Tanyos, like a Tanis home, but calendaric Tanyos is the only Tanis that falls out normally on a Friday. Whenever something falls out on Shabbos, it always gets either pushed forward or pushed back to Thursday. So we never opt in to a Tanyos that goes into Shabbos. A Asara B'Teves falls out on Friday, so we leave it as it is. So I wanted to take a look. I was thinking that this maybe is an interesting parak to pick up with, and that you'd have a chance at least to sort of peel away some of the layers. There's a lot going on our bubble. So I want to talk a little bit about where it appears in our davening, and then sort of the history of Al Naharis Bavel, and then to begin to take a look at some of the very fascinating features. There's a fork in the road in terms of how Mefarshim take it, Al Derech HaPshat. So maybe we'll at least begin to sketch that out, and maybe it'll give us some things to think about.
Are you going to address why this is the only time that can fall out on Friday?
Yeah, there is a... I'll talk about that briefly. It doesn't relate directly to Al-Naharis Bavel. Not very directly. There is a comment that's attributed to Avudraham. Avudraham was a student. He lived in the 1200s. The Sfaradi Rishon was the first who wrote a full sefer on the Siddur that we had. The first real comprehensive parish on the Siddur that we have. And he has a comment that... Asara B'Teves is the one fast other than Yom Kippur that were it to fall on Shabbos, we would fast on Shabbos. It doesn't fall on Shabbos, but if it would, then it's that serious, which is surprising. Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, we delay it to Sunday. So part of the reason it's given is he quotes a pasuk in Yechezkel. See, they already knew, we actually spoke about this briefly Friday night. The Navi Zechariah was one of the three Nevi'im that accompanied the Jewish people on their return to Eretz Yisrael in preparation for building the second base of Mikdash. So a lot of his Chag HaZachariah Malachi are three Nevi'im that accompany the back, and that sort of are overseeing that process of rebuilding Eretz Yisrael in general, rebuilding Shalim in general, rebuilding Beis HaMikdash in particular. And Zechariah is actually the one who engaged them more than the other two in terms of the halachic side of things. So he's actually the one who... No, I'm sorry. Chagai is the one who gives them a bechina. The Pesukim and Chagai say that a parvent message, he tested them in the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara. The Gemara has a debate whether they passed or failed. It's not clear. And Zechariah was asked the Shaila, he received a question from them about what to do. Now that we're back, so what should we do with all those Tanyos? See, he names the four Tanyos just by the name of the month. The Tanis of Tammuz, the Tanis of Av, the Tanis of Tishrei, and the Tanis of Teves. But it's...
Tishrei had nothing to do with
that. Well, Tishrei is Tom Gedalia. Right? Yom Kippur, but Tom Gedalia, right. Yom Kippur is right. But there's a reference to one of the references to Asara B'Teves. Asara B'Teves is sort of... has two different... a couple of different faces. What's going on in Eretz Yisrael, in terms of the beginning of the process, the initial lane of siege. And then it also appears in Yechezkel. Yechezkel is already in Bavel at the time, because there was a group that had been sent into Galus more than a decade prior to the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. The aristocracy had gone with King Yechaniah, been sent, taken with King Yechaniah into captivity in Bavel. It's Galus Yechaniah referenced in the Megillah. Exactly. The Mordechai was part of the aristocracy. Yechezkel was part of the aristocracy. They were taken earlier. They're already in Bavel when the process of Churban unfolds, and Yechezkel is told by Kadosh Baruch Hu, something's happening today. Here's what's happening today in Eretz Yisrael. I want you to write down Etzem Hayom Hazeh. Write down the very day. Write down the date. So Avodram says, since it references Etzem Hayom Hazeh, this particular day. So unlike the other Tanyos, which are mentioned name by month, so we aim for that day. But if Shabbos interferes, so you push it to a different day of the month. Etzem Hayom Hazeh has to be Etzem Hayom Hazeh. Has to be on that day. So Anubra suggested, to make a long story short, that and maybe part of what that story accomplished was that when the news reached Bavel through normal means a couple months later, they compared the dates, and it was exactly the date that Yechezkel got in the prophecy. So the specific date was important because the specificity of the date is what reassured the Jews in Bavel that Nevuah was still alive and kicking. I don't know if Anubra touched on this point, but Nevuah in general is an Eretz Yisrael phenomenon. That's in fact, as some suggest, that's why Yonah runs to the sea. Not because he thinks he can escape HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's not running away Mipinei Hashem, he's running Milifnei Hashem, from a state of being Lifnei Hashem. Because he thinks if he gets out of Eretz Yisrael, gets into the sea, no Nevuah will occur, and he'll be safe from any further messages. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him, I can send you lots of messages without having to talk to you. So that's perhaps why, and going into Gullus, they needed that reassurance that Kadosh Baruch Hu is with you, even though you're out of Eretz Yisrael, doesn't mean that the relationship is severed. So that's why the specificity of the date is more important. Were it to fall on Shabbos, we would fast on Shabbos. When it does fall on Friday, we go with that, and we don't push it any further. Those two messages may pop up a little bit as we take a look in Alnar's Bavel. I feel like Alnar's Bavel are going to scratch the surface tonight. Let's at least get started. There's a lot. It's an unusual parak of Tehillim. Let's at least get started, and hopefully the next time one of the Tanis rolls around, it will no longer be a Tanis. If it no longer be a Tanis, maybe we'll pair this with the Shir Malos. If it is still a Tana, so then we'll look at this Blei Neder on its own. But I mentioned before, so I think the three stages of looking at it on Aras Bavel. So first to look at it, first this is look at the historical question. Then there's the question of its role in Halacha and Minog, and there are several of those. And then we want to take a look at the Perek in and of itself. The most obvious question that strikes you when you look at the, you have to get past the first pasuk. Al naharas bavel sham yashavnu gam bachinu bizachreinu es tziyam, which most assume means that they're sitting at the rivers of Bavel. The way most, both the Rishonim and contemporary Mefarshim understand is they're being driven by their captors and driven and marching. You think about the death marches. That we can still talk to people who are alive now who remember those. There's something like that. They're walking hundreds of miles from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, probably skirting the desert, walking along the Fertile Crescent all the way to Iraq, and they finally come to a halt. That's where you picture. They come to a halt at the river. And the Euphrates is there, and then the Tigris is there, and Iraq basically lies between those two. They're marching, they're landlocked, finally they hit the river. As you imagine, they finally come to stop after months and months of walking. And this is sort of their first chance. That's where you usually understand this pasuk. This mizmar is their first chance to stop and think. And the expression of that moment is this parak of Tehillim. That's the simplest way of understanding it. Hopefully later we'll talk about maybe other ways of thinking about the tense here. But what's the very first thing that's surprising is we usually associate Tehillim with whom? David Melech, who lives around half a millennium before this happens. So I have to admit, so the first, this always struck me as sort of an obvious question. I figured, okay, now I'm working on Kuf Lam and Zion, so let's try to work this out. And at first I couldn't find anyone who talks about it. You open up Mikros Gedolos to Perkuf Laman Zayin. No one says a word. You open up a Dat Mikra. No one says a word. Others farm. No one's. No one seems to. Everyone's assuming that it's being written by the. It sounds like no one seems to assume otherwise, and that no one really seems to.
There's just a later edition.
So then what I discovered is if you open a Tehillim. See, Kuf Lam and Zion is near the end. I just pulled this. I left my Makaros Gedolos at home. And I pulled this one off the shelf, and something's funny about it. But, this one does. This edition doesn't even have any Hakdamos. You open up a bit more typical Malbim, Tanakh, and there are three Hakdamos to Tehillim, or three Hakdamos at the very beginning. There's the Ibn Ezra and Radak, early Rishonim, and there's the Malbim. So, Radak says that it's Tehillim. The Gemara says authored by David HaMelech, as well as the Gemara mentions a series of other people who sounds like were partners in some way with David HaMelech and Reinit. Most of them sound like they were earlier than David HaMelech. So the simple reading of the Gemara is that David HaMelech was the final figure, and maybe they're a little bit from Moshe, a little bit from sons of Korach, and this one, that one, throughout the ages up until David, and then David presumably writes the bulk of it and edits the rest and sort of compiles everything. That's the simple reading of the Gemara in Bava Basra. Gemara in Bava Basra, near the end of the first parak, gives a treatment of who writes, who's responsible for each sefer of Nevi'im Ketuvim. So Radak says, okay, and he says, every once in a while you'll come across the parak which is written by Ruach HaKodesh. We believe in Nevuah. Okay, so Al Naros Bavel he doesn't mention Al Naros Bavel directly. He says there are a couple of Mizmorim that seem to refer to later events. Ibn Ezra sort of opens the issue. He says there are different approaches. Was it written by with everything by David HaMelech, Bidei David HaMelech, with Ruach HaKosh or Nevuah? The Radak actually takes that opportunity to explain the difference between Nevim and Kesuvim, because Tehillim is the transition to Tehillim. The way our Tanakhs are printed, Tehillim is the first sefer in Tuvim. The way the Gemara presents it, Rus, the Gemara has an earlier sequencing that was more chronological. So I believe it starts actually with Rus, which is obviously older than Tehillim. But the way our Tanakhs are printed, Tehillim comes first. The Radak talks there about his understanding of the difference between Nevi'im and Ketuvim is how inspired are they? Were they written by Nevuah? Are they just the Ruach HaKodesh? He says this wasn't written by Nevuah. Written Ruach HaKodesh, that's why it belongs here together with Eov and so forth. That's the approach by Radak. Ibn Ezra opens the possibility that maybe it's all Ruach HaKodesh, or maybe different parts of Tehillim were written after the days of David HaMelech. And that's a theme that the Malbim in the 1800s picks up pretty vigorously in his Akdama. And he has the following. He says, the Gemara itself, elsewhere, talks about individual prakim of Tehillim possibly being written by Chizkiyo HaMelech, who has lived a couple hundred years, a direct descendant of David HaMelech, a couple hundred years later. He says, the Gemara itself seems to indicate the novel of Tehillim is written from the hand of David HaMelech. He says, Ezra is the one who closes up the Tanakh. Tanakh is closed at the end of the period of Nebuah, which is, as I said, Chagat Zechariah Malachi, that era, the beginning of the Bayi Sheni period. See, he says it's not an Ikar and Amuna that the David HaMelech wrote all of the Tehillim. He doesn't even put it that way. He says it doesn't detract at all from our appreciation of Tehillim or the reverence we have for Tehillim to say, clearly David HaMelech is responsible for the bulk of Tehillim. That's pretty obvious. But, or certainly the highlights of Tehillim. He says, who says that he was responsible for everything? And the Malbim actually points to quite a number of Pirkei Tehillim that sound very much post-David. Al-Nar's Bavel is most obvious, but he says, you find throughout Tehillim different Mizmorim that speak about Churban. That's not a David theme. All the things we know that David wrote, Churban never appears, both in Tehillim and in, let's say, Sefer Shmuel. So David Malach has never talked about Churban, which historically makes a lot of sense. He spoke about enemies, he spoke about fright, he speaks about running away, but he doesn't speak about destruction in Yerushalayim. He's way too early for that. So he says, Adarach Pshat, David Melech wrote most of it, and they were, just like the Gemara itself, in Bava Basra says that, I believe Mishlei, is written largely by Shlomo, but the Gemara says it was ultimately put together, compiled in final form by Chizkiyo and his yeshiva. So Malbim says that's his first approach. So Derech Pshat, he thinks that that's what's going on. And he says Chazal will every once in a while say al Derech Hadrash. There's a reference to something earlier, and he says it could be the Malbim thinks it could be some of these had been inspired earlier. Maybe had been committed to writing earlier al Derech Nevuah, but they were never presented publicly until later. And he takes the approach that Tehillim were predominantly mizmorim that were written to be said by Levian. Tehillim is what was said by Levian. And he says, he identifies a number of the names that the Gemara has. Let's, for example, B'nai Korach, right? The names the Gemara compiles from the headers, the bylines of Pirkei Tehillim. He says he thinks a lot of them were post of it. B'nai Korach, he thinks those are B'nai Korach that are at the time of the Churban. If you match it up, the B'nai Korach are the ones who are talking about Churban. That's what he thinks. Adar HaPshat. And he says, Al Naris Bavel, he says, maybe this is, this is Levim. Okay. Sounds pretty good. It's almost universally assumed. Al Aravim Bisocha, take a look at Pasuk Beis. Al Aravim Bisocha, Talinu Kino Rosenu. We hang our musical instruments on the Aravim, usually assumed to be the Aravas, the willows, and they're asked, sing us Shir Tzion, sing us the, sounds like the song we sang in Beis HaMikdash. It sounds like this is the Levium speaking. He says, this fits right in. This is the Levium speaking by Korban. Just like in Beis HaMikdash, they sang all sorts of happy songs mostly. It's the same genre, the same people. This is the Levium song, but not the Levium song about in Beis HaMikdash. This is the Levium song about Korban. So in a sense, it fits in to the bulk of Tehillim very, very well. But the theme, in terms of structure, but the theme obviously is a theme that's rare, somewhat rare in Tehillim. So that's the first question, just in terms of timing. The second question, in terms of the role that Kuf Lamed Zayin, Al Naris Bavel, occupies in Halacha and in Minhag. So the Perek as a whole. It's, I think, by no longer as popular, I think, as it used to be, to begin benching on a Tachanun day with Al Naharas Bavel. But that's on the books, at least in the bencher. It's that on a day that you say Tachanun, you say you begin with Al Naharas Bavel. On a day you don't say Tachanun, or at a Sudas Mitzvah, you proceed the benching with. The Shir Maraz B'Shuvah Hashem is Shiva Siyam, which of course is sort of a, as we'll see when we begin to take a look at this Mizmar, it's a counterpart in many ways to Al Naharas. Al Naharas Bavel, you hear them in a sense of, well, a counterpart, but yet similar. And what that all has to do with is, you take a look here, this printing is from Rabbi Elchanan Samet's Sefer on Tehillim. A very appealing sefer. One of the things that he does, he's very sensitive to the poetic structure of each parak that he looks at, and he always begins by presenting the parak the way he understands the stanzas to be broken down. So what for Rabbi Samet is the central stanza, the third stanza, Mishkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini Tidbak L'Shanil Chikim Lo Es Kerechi. The Shavua that the speaker makes to Yerushalayim, that I'm not going to forget you. I'm not going to forget you. If I forget you, let my right hand stop working. Let my speech stop. Samuel actually points out that sounds like a stroke on the left side of the brain. Because right, that's usually... The loss of the right hand and of speech are pretty symptomatic of a dysfunction on the left side of the brain. So you think that's what's being described? That's the shavua. That constellation of symptoms, and it's a loss both of the ability to do, to shkach yimini, and the ability to speak, to bakul shani lechiki imlo ez kerechi. If I don't Lizkar there, he suggests, probably means to speak. Like Zachar is Yama Shabbos Lakacho, we understand it means not just to think about the Shabbos, but it means that's the source for the mitzvah of Kiddush, to verbalize, Lahazgir, to talk about the Shabbos. So let's take a look for a moment at that central stanza, because there are three Shavuos. There are three Shavuos here. And this is really the center of this Mizmar. The three Shavuos he takes, Imeshkache, swearing that he won't forget. Well, here's what's going to happen if I dare forget Yerushalayim. Here's what's going to happen. Now I forget, but I need to active in this next step, Imlo is Kerechi. I need to actively verbalize about, speak about Yerushalayim. And then not only that, Imlo Aales Yerushalayim Roshim Chasi. Not only to talk about it, but to introduce it at the height of our Simcha. This central piece of Alnar's Bava, the Gemara understands, is a source for normative halacha. Gemara has in Bava Basra and in Masechta Sota different dinim and menhagim that were adopted at the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, inspired by these psukim to make a zeichel l'churban. The fact that the adachasana, we have the minute to break the glass, and adachasana, the din requires that the chasana wear ashes right in the makamat film. I rosh sim chasi. And the fact that when you build the house, you paint the house, you leave a 4x4, you leave an area, excuse me, an amma by an amma, unpainted, facing the front door, zeichel l'churban. The Gemara has other dinim as well, so that's all rooted in these psukim. So the imlo ezkerechi, so the minig that developed was to make a zeichel l'churban in advance of benching by reciting Al Naros Bavo. I think Rav Samitz want to point out that benching is a particularly apt juncture to make that zechira, to mention churban. Because you think, here's a fascinating take. I think at one point we were talking about brachas, and I think there's actually interest in going back to that at some point. I have to get back there also. A lot to do. I have to have a shiur Monday, a shiur on Tuesday, a shiur on Wednesday. Different sections. So one of the striking things about benching, just think about benching for a moment, just to appreciate the context of Al Naras Bavel. In benching, there are four brachas, right? There are four brachas and the harachamans. The four brachas are Hazanas HaKol and the Nodilacha and Rachim, and then Hakel Avinu Malkeinu. That fourth bracha, the Gemara says, that was a later addition, post-Churban Bayis Sheni, at the time, in the aftermath of the Bakach Revolt. The Bakach Revolt and Beitar, and the chesed that Klal Yisrael experienced, even in the midst of tragedy, that inspired Chazal to institute that fourth bracha. So that fourth bracha is important, but that's sort of a later, sort of separate piece. That's post-benching. Core benching is the first three brachas. So you think for a moment what those three brachas are about. You would think that benching would be about food,
yeah,
right? But only one third of benching is about food, because the first bracha is about food, the second bracha is about Eretz Yisrael, the third bracha is about Yerushalayim. Halal davar hu. Benching is really much more about Eretz Yisrael than it is about food. So that's, I think a number of people have written about that. So Rabbi Samuel's take is, it's really about, even the food is really about, the food ideally comes from Eretz Yisrael. The food is growing from the soil. The ideal soil for a Jew to be situated on is the soil of Eretz Yisrael. So benching is really, and again, in the psukim, the Gemara, the fact that we focus on Eretz Yisrael in benching sounds like it's a din d'oraisa. So al can either mean location wise, you're ideally sitting in Eretz Yisrael when you bench, or al ha'aretz hatova means about, referring to. You talk about Eretz Yisrael in the v'chalta v'savata v'rechta. So that's really in the psukim, that Eretz Yisrael, that the benching is larger than Eretz Yisrael. So it's a very apt place to make a zecher to either churban, or on a day when zecher churban is inappropriate, to sort of make an indirect reference to churban by talking about, well, in the future we'll no longer be in a state of korban. So either we refer to the korban directly or indirectly. And that brings us to actually taking a look at these psukim. So let's at least begin to see what's going on here. Let's read the psukim. I'll admit that I've not recited Al Naras Bavel that often. I'm not asking for hands. I don't know who hasn't. But let's actually read the psukim together, and let's, before we even talk about it, let's just sort of read the psukim and hear what's going on here.
That's like, is the whole thing before benching?
Yeah.
The whole thing.
The whole thing.
I only recognize part of the song.
Exactly, because they're all, right.
So I went to Campanos.
So exactly. Right. So psukim hein vom very familiar.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. So
and if you know. Or eich nashir, maybe, depending which eshka im eshkecheich is in. So let's just so think about what the topic is, when it's happening, and what the progression is over the course of the mizmah. Al nahar is bavol sham yashavnu gam bachinu b'zachrein asiyan. We're sitting, it sounds like we're at the rivers are bavel. We're sitting there crying in as we remember Tzion.
It's not like some perfect in the past, it sounds like.
We had.
It sounds like, yeah. No?
Yes, perhaps.
Blue perfect, am I using that right?
Yes, blue perfect or past perfect. It's all the same, yes. Wow, I'm impressed. Another way, what you're saying
it
is...
like I'm having a memory.
Of we had sat. We had that.
Like
good. So let's.
I'm even farther away.
That's what I'm thinking historically. It's like even.
I'm not a thing anymore. I'm already there, but I'm remembering the memory.
Right. So well. So keep that in mind as we. That's a very good point. Keep that in mind as we move through the mizmah. Al ravim b'sachar talinu kinyan arseinu. We hung or we had hung our instruments on the aravim. Kisham she'eluna and. I'll try to, right now we're translating based on the common approach. The Malbim, say as an aside, the Malbim actually translates a couple of key words differently, including Aravim, which is universally assumed to mean Aravos, and he takes this Mizmor in a totally different direction. Maybe we'll have time to end with that. Hisham she'elunu shoveinu, for there our captors asked us, or had asked us, divrei shir. They asked us for some song. The solaleinu simcha, tolaleinu is a word that perplexed Mepharshim for at least 1,000 years. It may be a parallel to the word shoveinu. It may also mean our captors or our destroyers. For those who are interested in plays on words, there are many plays on words, a lot of plays on words in this mizmar. Tolaleinu does sound a lot like tolinu in the previous perek. Shoveinu like Yashavnu, but okay. So what do they ask? The Babylonian captors were at the river. You know, you picture, like I was saying before, that they've been marching. Now they finally come to a halt at the river. Simple understanding of the context. They say, oh, Jews, Shiru lonu mishir tzion. Why don't you sing us? Sounds like we have Levium here. I was saying before, right? They had their instruments. Sing us the Shir of Tzion. Eich nashir ashir Hashem ha'atmas necha. And that's their response. Some understand that that Pasuk Dal is already sort of a new paragraph. There are some that takes it the way it's laid out here. That's their response, either spoken or that's what they think in their heads. However they put it, however they avoid the issue, we can't sing the simply understood. Shir Hashem is a reference to Shir Tzion, meaning the Shir of Beis HaMikdash. We're going to sing it here in Bavel, at the banks of the press. We're going to sing, they're going to contaminate the songs that we sang in Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Now, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkei, the famous psukim, right? If Rabbi Sandman points out, these are our odd, very unusual Shavuos. In Tanakh, you often will hear a Shavua as an if statement. Hashem nishbati ve'api im yivaon amenuchasi. Clearly a Shavua. God swore im yivaon amenuchasi. If they'll come to my menucha, if they'll come to Eretz Yisrael, meaning he swore that they will not. The dar that left Mitzrayim, God swore they're not coming into Eretz Yisrael. That's the way Shavua is often presented in Tanakh. If I want to say X will happen, I'll say if not X, because it's sort of short for. What does that mean? It's sort of short for, you know, let's let whatever bad thing befall me if this and this happens. It's a way of swearing it's not going to happen. Right? Or let such and such befall me if X and Y, Z doesn't happen. I'm trying to say X, Y, Z will happen. So the way it's usually presented in Tanakh is just as an in. We don't say, you know, what it, or else. You know, rarely do we spell out the or else. But what's going to happen if I'm not saying that? That's just sort of a turn of phrase. See, this is a, you have three shavuos here. Im. What's striking is that two of the three actually have the or else made explicit. They didn't just say im eshkach. See, you know, the third shavuah doesn't say what's going to happen if. Im lo alas Yerushalayim rosh simchasi. I swear that alas Yerushalayim rosh simchasi. If not, doesn't say what. Just if I don't. But the first two actually say, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim, that's really a way of swearing. It's really, in simple language, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim means, I swear that I will not forget Yerushalayim. Ani nishba shelo eshkachez Yerushalayim. But what's striking is here actually says, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim, tishkach yimini. And the Imlo Eshkarechi, again, tidbak l'sharon l'chiki. So there's actually, the strings are attached. The what out, the or else is made explicit, which sort of makes this a particularly jarring shavua. Now, and then the end of the mizmar moves on to talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu about asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take nekama. Sort of like looking forward to the future, asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he take nekama on the Bnei Edom and the Bnei Bavel. Bnei Bavel's role is obvious. Bnei Edom al derech drash is understood to be reference to the second galus, because Chazal use Edom as a reference to the Roman galus, to Rome, and the Rishonim point, the Ibn Ezra and others point out derech pshat, Edom is a reference to the Churban Bayis Rishon, because Bavel were the ones who came and captured and destroyed Edom. Literally, were the Bnei Esav who lived. Edom was what we would call now South Jordan. It's the southeast of the Yam HaMelech. That's where the Edom tribe lived. And they were very interested in kicking the Jews out of Israel, presumably because they wanted to move in.
Certainly.
Yes. Yes. Some things don't change. And the Bnei Edom were encouraging the Bavliim. Sure, it's a great when you take them over there so we can move in. And in fact, when the Jews come back, less than a century later, they come back to build the Bayis Sheni, and they discover that a lot of other tribes have moved in and sort of set up shop and really are not happy that the Jews are back. Which again, sounds not unfamiliar.
Doesn't Eicha follow a similar kind of a flow?
What do you mean?
Doesn't Eicha, it starts with what happened and then doesn't it end with consequences to the...
There are some references of consequences. And it does end with Hashiveinu Hashem Elachem Nashuva.
Oh, but not at the end. The consequences aren't at the end.
Can I take a look? I don't. You have to take a look in Parakeh. I'm not sure. Take a look. Not. Oh, you have an answer here in the Chumash. So the first thing you notice. So
but where's the reference to Edom here?
Here, Pasuk Zayin. Zachor Hashem levnei Edom with Yom Yerushalayim. Ha'omrim Aru Arai Zodva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, remember the Bnei Edom, that the day of Yerushalayim, we use Yom Yerushalayim in a happy sense, the day they got back Yerushalayim. This is the day that Yerushalayim was destroyed. They said, destroy our already so, but destroy it till it's nothing left. Of course, I mean, they were the cheering squad, in other words, but they weren't doing the work. The Bavlim were the ones doing the work, but they were encouraging. So may HaKadosh Baruch Hu repay them, may HaKadosh Baruch Hu repay Bavel. Now, so, think about tense, past, present, future. How does this mizmar break down? And this will bring us back to your ha'ara. Yeah. What's past, what's present, what's future?
Past, present,
future, right? The middle, the Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim, that sounds like that's right now. I'm swearing, I'm thinking about what happened. Al Naras Bavel, we were there, and they, as you said, they had asked us, we had been sitting there, we had put aside our instruments, no more of that, and the Bavliim had demanded, and we had refused. That's sort of a memory. When you think about what that means, right? This isn't even about there's no description till the very end of the Churban itself, but it's like the taunts. At the end, literally, the end of the road. They're kicked out of there, it's Israel, everything is destroyed, and they make them march and march and march and march, and they finally stop, and now what do? Now that they're done physically making them suffer, now they turn the knife. Oh yeah, well, let's hear some Shir HaSiyam. Hey, you guys used to play, right? It's like, that's the memory. And what's present is the Shua, and Rabbi Sam points out, this Imesh Kachay, it has to be at a later time. This can't be directly the following, right after the...
They just left.
Because...
Forgetting,
right. We're not forgetting. It's so raw. So it must be, what's going on, if this is like a sort of reaching back into a memory. Reaching back into an emotional memory. Not just, I remember factually what happened, but it's reaching back to the raw feelings. That this is a natural, Eich Nashir, Shir Hashem Necher, almost like we're worried that we're going to lose it. You have like this like image, and which is why there's also a shift from plural to singular. Because the first two chunks, the first four psukim, are all plural. Yashavnu, Bachinu, we were sitting, we were crying, we were remembering, we hung our instruments, they said to us, and we said to them, and how could we sing? It sort of dissolves. It's sort of that memory. And now it's one person speaking. Because they've gone their separate ways. Now everyone's sort of settled in. And Navi Yecheskel tells them, you're going to be in Babel for a while. Yirmiyahu told them beforehand, you're going to be in Babel for 70 years, which to us is not so long, because we've been in Galus for 2,000 years. But to those Jews, that was a long time. And Yecheskel tells them, Yecheskel is the I mentioned before, he's the Navi of Galus. And they arrive, he tells them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to sell in. We're not going back right away. We sell down, build homes, and build families, and build businesses, and we're going to be here for a while. We're going to have to figure out how to be good Jews in foreign territory. But we're not living in trailers, so we're not living in tents, we're settling. For now, we're going to settle. So, sort of like this, it's almost like this Jew who's been there for a while. And the Jews have gone their way. And after a couple of years, a couple of decades, like, we might be losing it.
This makes me wonder whose voice it is, though. Like, you're saying it's, like, not really known exactly who wrote it, if it's in a couple. Like, because it does seem almost personal.
Right, it is. So it's hard to know. Is this an individual Jew writing this in his own voice? Perhaps. It might be. It might be one person who we don't even know. Some gole, some was in Gauls. Alternatively, there's sort of like a poetic... There's a poetic voice here. In other words, it's not just writing his own personal feelings, but there's a poet who's writing... And maybe that's exactly why it's anonymous. Because he's trying to... This is the words of a Jew. Not just me. It's a Jew. It's a Jew... A depiction of a Jew in Galus. Could be us too. A Jew in Galus who's remembering that there had been a time when everything was raw and fresh. I'm actually involved with MTA is one of the schools that's involved with a Holocaust memory program called Names Not Numbers, where they interview...
I was saying the same thing, because there was a thing in the Wall Street Journal this week that they're very concerned because the last of the survivors
are
literally
disappearing.
Right. That's exactly what I was thinking.
So the woman who runs it, she teaches them, she teaches high Hebrew at MTA, and she runs a couple of programs, one of them is Names and Numbers. So she said to me recently, because I went along and they had a trip to Barry Park City to the Museum of Jewish Heritage. So she said to me, Satani said, this is 11th hour. In 10 years from now, there'll be very few people left to... There won't be that many people.
I don't have a name. It's my father, so I don't talk.
It's going to be harder and harder to find people to interview. So, but you think about, and when boys have this experience, it's totally different than just hearing about it in a class, because there's real
connection.
Yeah, and it's not just an abstraction. There's a real story, a real person talking about his family, talk about the way he grew up, talk about the way he was around the family table in the 30s, and it's totally different. So that's sort of what's going on here. Like, he reconnects with this, like, real emotional, raw place from the past. And then, okay, so, but now here, we were all together, Yashavnu Bachinu, the original Golem, and now we've sort of gone our individual ways. And now we're sort of, you know, everyone's settled into their place, into their town, and, you know, your own Dalai Lamas. And that's why now there's this Shavua, personally. It's not even a group Shavua, because we're not together. I mean, again, the Jews weren't, they had Kehilos, but poetically speaking, we're not together the way we were. It's in Mishka Chayth, now there's a need to swear. And it's so much so that the looking forward to the future isn't even about being Beis HaMikdash. We're not even at that point yet. We're at the point of remembering Yerushalayim and the point of the Esen HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking the Nekama against those who had harmed us. And in that sense, just to sort of close this piece, in that sense, that's where Sam points out, most of what I'm saying is at least what he says, an adaptation of what he says. In that sense, at least much of what I said in the last 20 minutes has been from his presentation. In that sense, Shir Malos, sort of the counterpart to Al Naros Bavel. Shir Malos is talking about actually dreaming about Geula. Sort of like the next stage. In Al Naros Bavel, we're not even dreaming about Geula yet. We're dreaming about not losing the past and about Nekama for the past. But Geula is still too far in the future. Which speaks to, in terms of a takeaway, it speaks to the need. There are a lot of takeaways. Maybe we'll talk about one thing and then we'll close with a reference to, sort of food for thought, a reference to the beginning of the Malbim. When you think about the Tanios and the Churban, so the Rambam presents them as opportunities for tshuva. Whereas Mazabal al Churban is an opportunity to change. But a key piece in that recipe is actually re-experiencing Churban. All the feelings and all the growth and all the dynamic that can come from a Tanis, it's all rooted in, if you think about sort of the movement from the first two stanzas of Anar's Bavel to the middle stanza, and it's sort of like there's like that reconnecting with those visceral memories, and that brings that sort of fast forward to now I'm ready to this again what we said is a highly, highly, highly charged Shua. Right, being explicit about Tishkech Yemini, it's saying what's saying out what you mean. That's fueled by actually plugging into visceral, vivid memories. When we talk about Churban, so we're not a couple years away; we're many years away. And part of the goal, if we obviously engage in Tishkech B'Av much more than any other of the tiniest in Churban, is to spend some time actually thinking about what we're missing. It's to spend time considering what Beis HaMikdash afforded us, that this closeness to HaKadosh, Shir Hashem, and this sort of this immediacy with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is a mashal that adapted a little bit that Chaim Friedlander has. He's talking about the 3 weeks, but it's presumably true about the other Tanyos as well. Charles Salanter said that What's special about the Gemara in Bava Metzia assumes that a typical day of the year you have to be an usual tzaddik to actually be Misabel Yerushalayim. The Gemara says there was someone who was arrested by the Jewish police for publicly being Misabel Yerushalayim, and they thought he was arrested for Gaiva.
Okay.
Who do you think you are? Oh, yeah, you're being Misabel Yerushalayim, sure. And then when they find out that he's really a great tzaddik Talmud Chacham, they release him. Interesting that there was a Jewish police. A religious Jewish place. And so you see from there, he says, that can already see that you have to be an unusually special person to salvage your lives. This is what we all do it. 3 weeks, 9 days. It's open to everyone. So apparently there are times. So what's going on? So it sounds like you have to be attuned to know that you're missing something. If you're in an area with poor cell phone reception and you're talking to someone, the call gets dropped. So it may just be. That doesn't mean the person hung up on you. It just means it's a bad reception. Right? You're trying to make a phone call, it can't get through. It may just be bad reception. If you're in an area of crystal clear reception, and you hear a click, and that's the end of the phone call, you know that someone hung up on you. And if so to be misabel and churban means that one is sensitive enough to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you sense that you're missing something. You sense that we don't have that closeness that we could have enjoyed with that Kaddish Baruch when we had a Beis HaMikdash. Any given day of the year, unless one is unusual tzaddik, I'm not so attuned to that Kaddish Baruch Hu in the first place that I can tell that I'm missing something. A great tzaddik perhaps can feel that any day of the year. But there are particular times of the year when every Jew can tune in, where ironically we're particularly close to that Kaddish Baruch Hu, Tisha B'Av, 3 weeks. The other Tanyos, it's ironic, we're close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu such that we can sense how much we're missing. But that's an opportunity, a day of a Aser HaBetavis. It's not a happy day of growth, but it is a day of growth. And it's an opportunity to capture, to seize. And part of it, I think, is sort of the spending time trying, even 2 minutes, 2-3 minutes, but trying to find moments to sort of visualize what Beis HaMikdash was like. To think about what it must have been like to live in days of Beis HaMikdash. To think about what it was like to experience Churban. And then that makes the beginning of the Mizmor leads to the middle. I'll leave you with a final thought. Al aravim b'socha talinu kino rosenu. I mentioned the Malbim has a totally different approach. He thinks that Aravim, he sounds like he's saying something there for Psha, that he thinks that Aravim doesn't mean Aravos. Those would be Aravos. Aravim, he thinks, is really, in Milashin, it's Aravim, the sweet things. He reads this as a poem about assimilation.
So how does that line mean?
Or at least the beginning. Not assimilation. Right, we were hanging our kinoros on the sweet things, on the beautiful things. And he understands that second chunk about the Shir Tzion, that means that it wasn't a taunt, why don't you sing the songs of Beis HaMikdash, you know, entertain us with the songs of Beis HaMikdash, like, sort of like Achashverosh using clay on Mikdash at his party. But he was saying that he reads it as, you're very talented, you Levim. When you were in Eretz Yisrael, Jewish culture, you sang Jewish culture songs. So now you're here. So why don't you use those, maybe even use the same songs, or at least use the same talents to sing about Bavel. Adapt Shir Tzion to sing about Bavel. And the response is, Eich Nashir as Shir Hashem al Admas Necha, not al, physically located. Right, how could we sing it about Admas Necha? I believe, you got to take a look, that he even reads the al Naharas Bavel. They weren't sitting at Naharas Bavel, but they're thinking about Naharas Bavel. And they're crying at what the choice that they're making. And then there's this direct lead-in. In other words, the way it's usually read, so then Sam's analysis seems to flow very naturally, that there's the past, and then now, Meshkechech Yerushalayim. And it's sort of, they're very different, like you were saying before, right? One is this feeling of soul raw, and the other one is like, I'm worried I'm going to forget. For the Malbim, there's a much smoother flow. In other words, it's grappling with, not grappling with the raw emotion right after Churban, it's the danger of sort of sinking in and sort of adapting too much to Bavel. And that's why their response is, no, to apply Shir Hashem to Ad Masdecha, just the opposite. In Meshkachei Hashem, I will not let go. I might be elsewhere, but I'm not going to forget what was, I'm not going to forget who I am. And you have to figure out how it flows through the rest, but that's a whole different approach and a different set of lessons to think about and to draw from. Thanks so much. And Rosh Hashanah, between now and the end of the week, we should be Zohar that you will assess on Simcha. And if not, hopefully this will provide some useful things to think about.
First Monday night in January.
Oh, thank you. I think we're up for... Oh, yes. Shabbat, we're going to talk about Baruch Hinashim. Right? That was the plan? I think so. Which is relevant to every Rosh Chodesh, and we'll see maybe how it relates to the Tu B'Shvat.
Oh.
Baruch Hinashim's song of nature.
Right.
The song about...
She was
a really
lightning
spot. Miriam Lightning's
daughter.
Oh, that's right. Which I was not after. I think it was
Williams only.
Yeah. But that was the CD. Right? That was the CD. They had sent out that CD.
Yes. That's right.